That was fun.
Your mic is not on.
Oh, yeah. I will call the meeting to order of the Children and Families Committee. Take one. We might have experiencing a little deja vu here, but it is great to be joined by our colleagues across the aisle. We're going to have a good time in a very civil committee. And how we will kick it off today, well, I guess we can quick. The House rules are in your document. They are basically Chair Pinto's rules from last cycle. Really, the only things to know is we are going to try and abide by going through the chair in as much as humanly possible, just to make sure everything's done in an orderly and respectful fashion. Also, the one tidbit that might be different than other committees, if you have a bill with a legislatively directed grant, to be heard, you must be ready with that to that nonprofit's 990. I know some other committees do that. It was a recommendation by the Office of Legislative Auditor, and sounds like a great idea to me to make sure everybody knows what's going on as we do the people's work. So those are the rules. Are there any questions on the rules? That's exactly what I thought. Perfect. All right. So we will now do member and staff introductions, and we will start with one of my favorite House Democrats. Representative Hansen, why don't you kick us off?
Thank you, Chair West. What an honor to be one of your favorite Democrats. It's an honor to be here. Hi, Children and Families Committee. I'm Jess Hansen. I represent District 55A down in Savage in Northwest Burnsville in the Southwest suburbs, and I'm excited to be here and excited to have the two greatest chairs in the House this year.
Will Golding, Republican Research.
Representative Pam Altendorf, I'm in District 20A, Red Wing area.
Chair, it's prerogative. It's fun. You get to talk whenever you want. I forgot one of the tidbits is you must share your favorite candy. So, Representative Hansen.
Sour Patch Kids.
Representative Altendorf.
We'll go with Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
And Mr. Golding, why not?
Jolly Ranchers.
Great variety here. All right. Representative McDonald.
Salted nut roll.
Was that your introduction or your candy?
No. Salted nut roll sounds better than my name. Joe McDonald, representing Wright County. Been here for way too long, 14 years now. Going on my 15th. Happy to be on Children's and Families, two of the most important things in life.
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nathan Coulter, in my second tour of duty here in the legislature and on Children and Families, serving District 51B, which is basically the eastern half of the city of Bloomington. So if you've ever been to the Mall of America, you've been to my district. I think I'm going to go with Milk Duds.
Representative Olson.
I'm Representative Bjorn Olson. I represent the Fairmont, Blue Earth, Medelia area, basically everything south of Mankato to the Iowa border. New to Children and Families this year, but not new to children and having a family. I've got two three-footers and a two-footer at home. So for those of you who use the metric system, that is a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old, and almost 2-year-old. Favorite candy is actually in my pocket. I'm a 90s kid, Warheads.
More of a Cold War kid, maybe. I got some pity laughs. That's great. Vice Chair Nelson.
Representative Nathan Nelson from 11B. This is my fourth term, second term on Children and Families, and I like a Heath bar.
So we're going to hop over to Representative Zeleznikar.
I'm Zeleznikar, and I'm from 3B, Two Harbors, Hermantown, Proctor, Rice Lake, Gary New Duluth, 14 townships, and happy to be here. It's my second term on Children and Family, and I would say it's Take 5. That's my favorite.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I'm Amanda Hemmingson-Yeager from South Maplewood and Woodbury, and we're going to go with a Twix bar.
Representative Perez-Vega.
Buenos dias. Representative Perez-Vega. I represent District 65B here in this capital that we're sitting in right now and West St. Paul. I have a beautiful 5-year-old, soon to be 6-year-old in 2 months. She keeps reminding me every day. Kindergartner. And my favorite dulce would be Almond Joy.
Miss Mock.
I'm Annie Mock with House Research, and my favorite candy is hot tamales.
Mm. Ms. Pinelli.
Mr. Chair, Danielle Pinelli from House Research, and my favorite candy is Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Mr. Berg.
Berg, I'm House Fiscal Staff, and I'll have to also go with the Heath Bar.
Mm. Let the record show that Mr. Berg's favorite candy bar is the Heath Bar. Ms. Sunderman.
I'm Sarah Sunderman, also from House Research, and my favorite candy is Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Let the record show Ms. Sunderman's favorite candy bar. It's not a bar. Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Ms. Rice.
Megan Kobe. I am filling in as your CLA today, and my favorite candy is probably Twix.
And Ms. Hayward.
I'm Lauren Hayward. I'm the committee administrator, and my favorite candy is Kit Kats.
Chair Katiza-Batum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You having the microphone is going to be interesting with all these dad jokes that we've got this session. I am Carly Katiza-Watoon. I represent Eden Prairie, District 49B. I'm in my fourth term in the legislature and my fourth term on one of the many iterations of Early Childhood / Children and Families Committee. And I am very excited to be here and serve as co-chair to Chair West. I've got four kids at home. They are 11, almost 10, 8.5, and 4.5, and been working in this little kid space personally and professionally for about 6 years. Our older three kids are adopted, and we welcomed three at once, which I don't recommend if you can help it. But it's been lovely, and they're lovely. So, and my favorite candy is Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, which my children know, and then when they come home on Halloween, they make a pile for mom, and it's fantastic.
Good to know. I need to train my little girls to do so. So, hello, everyone. I'm Nolan West. I represent Blaine, Ham Lake, and Columbus in the Minnesota State House. And my favorite candy is the Hi-Chew. Genuinely the greatest candy. I used to pay to import this from Japan. Now they sell it at Target. It's wonderful to see. And it was originally designed as a chewing gum you can swallow, hence the name Hi-Chew. So I'm very excited to chair this committee. We are going to have a good time. My goal here is collaboration. Because the candy will make a rounds. This is not just a prop. My goal here is that we actually work together. Hence, we're all sitting intermingled. We are all sharing human experiences. Because one thing we can forget in politics is that no matter how much you don't like somebody's political position, they're likely not a bad person, with the exception of Garofalo. But other than that,
he's gone now.
So. What we're going to do here, we're going to be civil. We're going to get the work done. My goal is to treat everyone with respect, and I know my co-chair feels the same. If you ever have any issues with any of our members, just bring it to one of us, and we will make sure everything runs smoothly. That goes for testifiers as well. We'll treat testifiers with respect, and the expectation is they treat us with respect as well. I just had, my wife just had a little girl a little over 2 weeks ago. So as chair in Children and Families, I'm very much on brand. I slept from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. and 4 to 5:50 today. So if I'm a little out of it, I apologize. You can take that up with the wonderful baby Sloan. And then I have a 19-month-year-old girl. 19-month-year-old, that makes no sense. Sybil. And Sybil and Sloan will one day have a beautiful law firm, because that just sounds great. So what we're going to, like, genuinely my goal is we can have this a place. It's the end of the day. This committee will always be likely the last thing we do any given day. And we can make it a positive space where we work together, because literally everyone here wants more affordable and accessible childcare. Everybody wants to support our foster care system. We all share the same goals. We might disagree on how to get there, but if we start actually liking each other, or as much as we can muster, and realizing we're people, I think we can really do some good work given the makeup of the legislature. So I challenge all of us to be an example and show that, hey, in Minnesota, we can get some real stuff done. So without further ado, we will now move on to the agenda. So I would like to invite Commissioner Tiki Brown up and anyone who is accompanying her to kick off a presentation from the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. And one other tidbit I will say, we had a lovely meeting in my office before, getting to know each other and talking about our position, our policy positions, what we care about, and I think we can deliver results that can make this new department effective and efficient and better serve the people of Minnesota. And I might just continue talking to make sure everything's set up. So I will begin the handing of the hi-chews. It's going to be like in church where your rappers are too loud, but it's we'll have to just live with it. I would encourage members to also bring their favorite candy, and I just realized Representative Nadeau did not introduce himself yet. You have to let us know a tiny bit about you and your favorite candy. Oh, yeah, she needs to get fired. Man, I am just dropping the ball. Representative Nadeau.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. I'm Danny Nadeau. I represent Northwest Hennepin, the cities of Rogers, Dayton, and Champlin. A little bit about, how about just favorite candy? Perfect. Cinnamon suckers.
Is that a representative of the dough at point of order? What?
The cinnamon hard candies?
Oh, so grandma candy, okay.
he's wearing a sweater that goes with it.
Chair, Katiza Batun, you're supposed to go through the chair before you speak.
I apologize, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hicks.
Kim Hicks. I represent 25A, which is Rochester. And I like all the candy, so this is really, really hard. Basically, if you put it in front of me, I'll eat it. It doesn't really matter what it is.
We'll count that as haichu. All right. So I think the winning candy is Reese's Peanut Butter Cup. So congratulations to the Mars Corporation or whoever makes it. Commissioner Brown, without further ado.
Okay. Good afternoon, Chair West and members of the Children and Family Children and Families Committee. How's the mic sound? Okay. I'm Tiki Brown, the Commissioner of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. I'm happy to be with you here today to provide an overview of the creation of the department, the agency vision, the programs that have been or will be transferred over to the department, our leadership and organizational structure. And with that, I'll get started. Oops. In just a moment.
So Mr. Morinaga invented haichu in 1884, which actually is true. Commissioner Brown.
Okay, thank you so much, Chair West and members. All right, here. So on slide one here, we are sharing information about the launch of the department, which started just on July 1st. We launched a new agency to create a sustainable public face for children's issues in state government with aligned outcomes and policy, improving the front door for services, easing access and navigation for families, and improving services overall. The previous decentralized structure reduced the state's ability to focus on children's and families, hence the new department. So we're excited to have this new agency breaking down silos that existed prior, and we're looking across services at the resources that are available to ensure that Minnesota is getting the most out of these resources in a way that makes a meaningful difference in people's lives. Our agency vision and mission is listed here. We are investing in the vision and mission so that Minnesota is a state where all children can and do thrive. We lost the cord again, friends. And I'll just keep mentioning through. Thriving families are a cornerstone of a strong Minnesota. The Department of Children, Youth, and Families helps children, youth, and families connect to benefits and resources to thrive. The demand, the need, and the request for services come from families across our entire state. Our goal is to address these needs, including finding pathways to address gaps in services faced by families in all 87 counties and 11 sovereign tribal nations in Minnesota. So DCYF was established to ensure that children are at the center of government, that there's a clear front door access to services and programs are available, and that there are opportunities to better coordinate funding, programs, and outcomes for children and families. The development and implementation of this agency included significant community engagement, and as we finish our implementation process, we'll expand upon these efforts to ensure that we are serving children and youth and their families in the best way possible. So some of our principles are listed here. We will use a whole family systems framework for our programs and services, which means that we will approach practice, program, and policy decisions in a way that really recognizes and addresses the needs of children and adults in their lives simultaneously. You can see a few of the other items there. The areas listed here are a picture of the breadth of programs and the population that DCYF programs serve across the state. And as you can see, these programs touch hundreds of thousands of Minnesota families, helping ensure that they receive the support they need to thrive and achieve what they need to be successful throughout their lives. This is a lot on one slide, but you can see the programs that are currently have transferred over to the department and those that will transfer. When fully implemented, the agency will include programs from four different agencies. Children and Family Services programs and the related Office of Inspector General programs from the Department of Human Services, programs from the Office of Teaching and Learning at the Department of Education, programs from the Department of Public Safety related to youth and justice, and Help Me Connect from the Department of Health. And I'll provide more information about each administration a little later. This timeline shows the transfer of the different programs into the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. So in July, we had early learning services move over from the Department of Education, Children and Family Services from the Department of Human Services and some central operating functions, such as communications, HR, et cetera. In October, additional central operating functions, such as our grants and contracts, compliance and human resources, or Human Services Performance Management Council transferred. In January, just a few weeks ago, Help Me Connect program from the Department of Health transferred over, along with some additional central operating staff. And then our largest transfer is coming up right in June as functions from the DHS Office of Inspector General, the Youth, Justice, and Office of Restorative Practice programs from the Department of Public Safety, and the final group of central operating functions from DHS transfer over to us. I will mention that in accordance with DCYF implementation statutes, the after-school community grant program will only transfer if additional funding is appropriated. So at this, in the meantime, the program's grants are funded through 2027 and are at the Department of Education. Here's just a high-level picture of our executive leadership team. All positions have been filled at that time with the exception of two. We are still filling our deputy commissioner position and then the Department of Children, Youth, and Families inspector general position actually starts tomorrow and will work as a knowledge transfer position with the Department of Human Services and then transfer with their team over to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families in June. We are also in the process of hiring a children's mental health services manager and a children's disability services manager. These two positions will provide leadership and coordination of programs to ensure that DCYF is coordinating with other state agencies to understand and address the needs of children with mental health concerns and children with disabilities and their families. For your reference, this is an overview of our organizational chart for our agency executive leadership and program structure within the four policy administrations. We have the DCYF programs organized into four different administrations. They're listed on this slide, along with the names of their assistant commissioners, and I'll walk through each administration next briefly. So we'll start with Children and Family, or Children's Safety and Permanency Division, which is led by Assistant Commissioner Rebecca St. George, who just prior to joining the department served as the legal and policy counsel for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe and was a Duluth City Attorney. This administration is responsible for overseeing the state's child protection system and the many child welfare programs. They administer, or they develop and implement state laws, policies, and best practices to support better outcomes for children and families at risk of entering or are in the child protection system. In addition, the Child Safety and Permanency Administration partners with the University of Minnesota. They have the Twin Cities to provide a foundational and other training for the Minnesota child welfare workforce. Additionally, this administration partners with the Tribal Training and Certification Partnership, which is affiliated with the University of Minnesota Duluth. And this provides education and training to new and ongoing child welfare workers on the Indian Child Welfare Act, the Minnesota Indian Family Preservation Act, and also how to engage with American Indian families and tribes. The Early Childhood Administration is led by Assistant Commissioner Diane Halsey. She most recently served as the President and CEO of Family Partnership. This administration oversees programs that support the early childhood care and education with a focus on increasing access and supporting high quality early education opportunities as well as the early learning workforce. Families have told us in this space that they would like early care and education programs that are accessible and affordable. And we also have heard specifically from early care and education programs that have told us they want resources that allow them to provide high quality care and education with a well-compensated, prepared, and supported workforce. Our Economic Opportunity and Youth Services Administration is led by Assistant Commissioner Kate Weeks, who most recently served as the Executive Director of the Office of Justice Programs at the Department of Public Safety. This administration combines the Office of Economic Opportunity from the Department of Human Services with youth justice programs from the Department of Public Safety. The Office of Economic Opportunity administers anti-poverty programs through a network of community action agencies and nonprofit organizations, which includes food and nutrition programs and the Family Assets for Independence in Minnesota, or FAME program. The youth justice programs transferring from the Department of Public Safety are intended to enhance the welfare of Minnesota's youth and broaden their opportunities for a better future. The Family Well-Being Administration is led by Assistant Commissioner Dr. Shanine Moore. Dr. Moore comes to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families from the Department of Human Services, where she previously served as the Assistant Director and then Director of the Child Support Division and a Deputy Assistant Commissioner for Children and Family Services. This administration includes programs that are part of Minnesota's Critical Social Safety Net for Children and Families by providing food assistance, cash assistance, child support services, and employment services. We know that children learn more easily, adults work more productively, and seniors are healthier with proper nutrition. This administration's programs help people with low incomes, including seniors, get the food that they need for nutritious and well-balanced meals. And as you know, Minnesota's cash assistance programs help families living in poverty and often in crises achieve economic stability through work. So here we have listed just a few of the opportunities that we see as we are still completing our transition. I wanted to mention the SSIS system, our social services information system. So as we continue to transition within the agency, we're looking for opportunities to improve our services and our partnerships with counties, tribes, and the community. And one of the biggest challenges facing the department is our aging information and technology systems. The most critical need we have right now is to modernize the child welfare portions of the SSIS system, or the Social Services Information System. And as many of you know, the system is based in the 1980s and 1990s technology. It's unstable. It leaves workers facing frequent system crashes for minutes or hours at a time, and less able to spend time with children and families. We've had a number of investments in 2023 and 2024 to begin the process, to plan modernization, to work on specific modernization work, and are looking forward to continuing to engage with you all, counties, tribes, to ensure that an end product really functions appropriately and supports, not hinders, workers in their ability to engage with children and families. We also wanted to mention supporting access to high-quality early care and education. Minnesota families need access to affordable, high-quality care and education opportunities for their children. And right now, there is a gap between what families can afford and the true cost of high-quality care and education. Our new alignment between the child care services and the early learning services divisions will allow us to look holistically at the variety of programs family access to support their early care and education needs to ensure that they are delivered in ways that provide families with the most impact. I'd also like to mention the social safety net. The Family Well-Being Administration is currently focused on implementing historic MFIB reforms that were made during the 2023 legislative session, including six-month budgeting, streamlining sanction policies for both families and frontline workers, and sunsetting the diversionary work program so that families can enter MFIB directly rather than two different programs to administer. And then finally, I would mention an opportunity in preventing youth justice system involvement by bringing in a new human service lens to youth justice programs. It's an opportunity to ensure that Minnesota takes public safety seriously while prioritizing rehabilitation and prevention of system involvement by addressing the root causes of juvenile delinquency over a single-minded punishment approach. This work acknowledges that children are children, and this population of at-risk youth often needs access to mental health services, educational support, and the ability to remain or rejoin the community and other interventions to ensure accountability while supporting these youth in becoming successful adults. This ends my portion of the first part of the presentation. I'd like to turn it over to Ashley Reisenhauer to discuss the financial information.
Ms. Reisenhauer, please introduce yourself for the record. Hopefully that's correct.
Thank you. I'm Ashley Reisenhauer. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. I'm going to give a brief overview of our agency's budget. So programs and functions are continuing to transfer to DCYF throughout state fiscal year 2025. The transition year accounting structure is one tool that has given DCYF that flexibility this year. So with feedback from our partner agencies, during this transition year, DCYF is continuing to use accounting structures in the originating agencies, the Department of Education, Department of Health, and Department of Human Services. Even though funding remains in existing accounting structures, DCYF leadership manages spending and priorities. We have interagency agreements and approval structures within the financial systems to manage the day-to-day operations and processes. And then beginning July 1, 2025, budgets will be set up in new DCYF accounting structures. DCYF's total expenditures are projected to be about $3.7 billion per year. So while we are a new state agency, we're not small. DCYF is actually the third largest state agency in terms of our general fund budget. The largest source of our expenditures is federal funding, which makes up about $2.5 billion, or about two-thirds of our budget. The state general fund makes up about $1 billion of our spending, and the remaining $290 million comes from other funds, such as special revenue funds. In addition to the expenditures shown in the graph, DCYF also oversees an additional $1 billion in technical and fiduciary funds. This is primarily the Child Support Program, which is about $640 million per year. These are funds that don't belong to the state, so they don't necessarily show up in budget fund balances, but they're an important component when we think about DCYF's responsibility. The DCYF implementation legislation required that programs, resources, and a proportional share of operating resources transfer from originating agencies to DCYF. So as a result, about 99.7% of DCYF's budget transferred from originating agencies. That includes not only program funds, staff who administer them, and the systems, but it also includes a proportion of central operations, things like finance, HR, and management services that transferred to DCYF. In addition, the 2023 and 2024 legislatures appropriated funds for certain leadership positions that all agencies need, like a chief financial officer, and to address critical operating positions that DCYF would need to support programs and services. Programs and services do make up over 90% of DCYF spending, and we have a large grant portfolio. So about $2.4 billion, or just over 60% of our spending, is in grant programs, as you can see on the slide. While I'll talk more about grant programs on the next slide, the largest single program in grant spending is food support, which is provided through the SNAP program and accounts for nearly half of that spending. In addition, about $1.1 billion, or 30% of our expenditures, are for forecast programs that provide economic assistance, adoption and kinship assistance, child care support, and early childhood programs. About 7% of our expenditures are for program operations and admin. Right around half of that is, or about 3.5%, is for compensation costs. So when all programs have fully transitioned, DCYF will have about 900 to 1,000 FTE. About 95% of the agency's positions are ones that are transferring from originating agencies. In addition, other administrative costs like systems, rent, and other operating needs that support program administration. As I mentioned in the last slide, DCYF spends about $2.4 billion per year on grant programs. About one quarter of this is state general fund, while federal funds make up the remaining 70% of grant programs. Food assistance provided through SNAP makes up about 1.7, or half, of that funding and is entirely federally funded. Other grant programs at DCYF do things like providing and expanding the availability of childcare, funds programs across the child welfare system. They provide economic assistance and poverty reduction and support youth intervention and restorative practices. So as you can see by the slide, it shows total spending in each budget activity. But some of the examples of programs that are supported under this include things like the Great Start Compensation and Payment Program. It's about $176 million in fiscal year 2026 that supports over 6,000 child care providers. We have early learning scholarships that are provided to over 10,000 children between birth and kindergarten. About $200 million in grants to county and tribal agencies that provide core child welfare services, as well as prevention and family preservation. We have economic assistance for low-income families, such as food shelves and the diaper distribution program. And then youth services, such as the Youth Intervention Program, that promotes and sustains youth crime prevention and intervention solutions, as well as the Restorative Practices Initiative. Forecast programs in which spending is projected based on enrollment and service costs account for about $1.1 billion of our spending. Just under one-third is state general fund, while 68% is paid for by federal funding. The federal shares do differ by programs, but for example, both the early childhood family education and health and developmental screening programs are entirely state-funded. DCYF oversees five forecast programs, and the slide shows the total projected spending in fiscal year 26. Working through the programs, the MFIP program provides cash and food assistance for low-income families with children and serves about 77,000 people. The MFIP child care assistance helps over 6,500 families who use MFIP afford child care while they're engaged in work. North Star serves over 19,000 children through foster care, adoption assistance, and kinship and relative custody assistance. The Early Childhood Family Education is a program for children birth through kindergarten, their parents, and parents who are expecting children. It promotes learning development for young children with a focus on parent involvement in education. Approximately 17,000 children are served at over 323 school districts across the state. And the health and developmental screening provides funding to school districts, Head Start programs, and some clinics to identify possible health or developmental concerns, as well as linking family to resources. So in fiscal year 2026, nearly 54,000 children are expected to receive a screening through that program. And that, I'll turn it back over to Commissioner Brown.
Commissioner Brown.
Okay. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Ashley. I'm going to close out today's presentation with a few slides on program integrity related to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families programs. One thing I wanted to mention as I address these issues, please be aware that the department does not yet have an Office of Inspector General, as I mentioned earlier. I am not yet an expert, although I am working hard to expand my knowledge and expertise, because this is a very important issue and a top priority of the of our agency and also of the administration. So first, just to start off, Minnesota is a state committed to helping people, and we're committed to providing services that improve the lives of Minnesotans. Fraud against public programs is unacceptable. It's not a victimless crime, and it harms the same people that we are trying to help with these services. When talking about fraud, abuse, and error, we would like to ensure that we're using some common definitions. And so when we think about fraud and abuse, it's that they are an intentional and at sometimes criminal behavior. But at times we find errors that are unintentional and not typically criminal. A failure to meet some of the licensing requirements alone is not considered financial fraud or abuse. However, depending on the type, frequency, and number of violations, failure to meet regulatory requirements may indicate that further investigation is in fact needed. The Office of Inspector General at the Department of Human Services detects and investigates fraud, abuse, and errors when they find it. These investigations often result from tips and data analysis. OIG refers cases of suspected fraud to law enforcement partners for criminal investigation and prosecution. This includes the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension for child care provider fraud and two counties for SNAP and MFID recipient fraud. OIG takes administrative action when it finds fraud, abuse, and error. And these administrative tools include a number of things: warnings, stipulated provider agreements, monetary recoveries, fines, payment withholds, suspensions, and terminations. As we discussed earlier, licensing and program integrity functions from the Department of Human Services, OIG, will transfer to the department in June. And these program integrity functions will relate to the Child Care Assistance Program, the Great Start Compensation Support Payment Program, and MFIB and SNAP recipients. The program integrity work for the child care programs includes efforts to prevent, detect, and investigate fraud, abuse, and error. In addition, OIG performs data-informed audits of child care providers who receive grants. So if an audit reveals that a provider did not qualify for the grant, OIG will recoup that funding. If an audit reveals that there has been suspected fraud, the case is then referred to law enforcement. Additionally, the OIG supports county and tribal nations that investigate allegations of fraud by involving recipients of MFIB and SNAP. So this slide just provides a little bit more detail on the tools and the partners related to the CCAP program integrity specifically that are used by the Office of Inspector General. You will notice in green the early and often team. Child care center licensors and child care investigators work closely with applicants for child care center licenses and newly licensed providers, offering technical assistance to increase compliance and reduce errors. The Child Care Assistance Program Provider Investigations takes appropriate action if a child care provider violates rules or laws relating to the program. And actions include administrative remedies to stop and recover payments and referrals to law enforcement agencies. The Child Care Grant Audits in blue on the screen. Investigators conduct compliance checks and audits of licensed child care centers and these providers that receive grants. Audits and compliance checks are random and implemented without notice to the provider. For the recipient fraud investigations, through the Fraud Prevention Investigation Program, or FPI, the division works with counties and tribal nations to investigate recipient fraud. They administer annual grants that fund investigator positions, covering all Minnesota counties and participating tribal nations. We also have the OIG Data and Analytics Office, which analyzes child care provider service and billing data, as well as recipient benefit data, as well as creates standard reports to identify concerning patterns and outlier service provisions and billing to inform fraud, abuse, and error detections and investigation. And then we also just mentioned the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension off to the side here. Which again is where the Office of Inspector General refers cases of suspected fraud, who then conduct criminal investigations and works with prosecutors to move forward on those cases. And then at times, county agencies are involved with CCAP program investigations as well. So with our new soon-to-be Inspector General starting tomorrow, they will work really closely with not only my agency, but with the Department of Human Services over the upcoming months, really to make sure that we have a seamless transfer of these program integrity functions and that we are well positioned as an agency to address fraud, abuse, and error head on. My team and I look forward to partnering with the Wallace Flanagan administration, the legislature, and other state agencies to ensure that resources are used properly and effectively to support our fellow Minnesotans who need assistance. And that concludes our presentation. We'd be happy to answer any of your questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Thank you very much, Commissioner Brown and Ms. Kind of had it somewhere. Reisenauer. I should be able to do that. I've got some German blood in me. So a couple quick questions. Thank you. All right. We skipped over an introduction of one of our members, Representative Sensor Mura. Please introduce yourself.
My name is Samantha Sensimura. I'm the state representative for District 63A, which is part of South Minneapolis. I'm going into my second term. It's my first term on children and families. I have a newborn, like Chair West. I have a one-month-old, so I'm happy to be participating virtually for this week. And my favorite candy is Sour Patch Kids.
Thank you. Sorry for skipping you over, Representative Sensimura. All right, so to the questions. One of the bullet points on the presentation was implementing historic MFIP. Do you have any more specifics on what that entails?
Do I have some specifics? Yes, Chair West, thank you, and members. We have, I might need to phone a friend here to get a little bit more detail, but I'll start. Off. During the 2023 legislative session, we did move towards putting in place measures that help reduce sanction measures towards MFIB recipients, in addition to a few other things that is completely escaping my mind. So, Jennifer, if you wouldn't mind.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Please introduce yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jennifer Sommerfeld. I'm the Government Relations Director for the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. I might need to phone a friend in case I missed something, but my understanding is the other two pieces, my recollection is six-month budgeting, which was legislation passed in 2023 to ensure that families are able to stay on MFIP and have a consistent monthly amount for 6 months to help stabilize rather than having monthly ups and downs in what their assistance is, which made it difficult for families to find stability and move off of MFIP. And then also elimination of the diversionary work program was a legislative proposal brought forward that session by counties. And so that is also one of the reforms that's coming up.
Thank you very much. Another question, in a presentation from DHS, which is not DCIF, obviously, they had I included this in the packet for everybody's edification. They showed how the breakout works with the new department, so the new structure, and it results in a net gain of 638 employees, according to their numbers. You mentioned in your presentation that 99.7% of at least the Department of Children, Youth, and Families budget was fully transferred over. My question is, looking at the significant increase in employees, is that not in the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, or are you paying them a whole lot less? I don't know. Ms. Reisenauer.
Mr. Chair, I'm not quite sure. I think we need to look at the comparing the two. The net change in employees didn't change between agencies, but we can work together to better understand that. What you're looking at.
Thank you, Ms. Reisenauer. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for Commissioner Brown and Reisenauer. In regards to the KSTP's recent story and the 62 active investigations of the child care fraud, I noticed that on your slide, page number 7, that programs are being transferred from DHS, including licensure of the facilities to DCYF, and including the Inspector General's Department of Health and Human Services. Was that any reason why some of this got slipped through, where there was over 92 violations at one particular learning center? I think a quality learning center had 95 violations from 2000 to 2023, but we're transferring some of the responsibilities to the child care committee or the agency. Was that some of the reasons why that some of those violations were slipped through and not inspected?
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, Chair West, and thank you for that question. So the Office of Inspector General at DHS has always investigated the child care licensing functions, and the KSTP story that you mentioned, that work continues and remains currently at the Department of Human Services. When it transfers over in June to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, the specific functions that will transfer over include those portions that will continue to investigate fraud and also licensing functions with our child care programs, but there has been no change in the current Department of Human Services operating functions and systems as a result of the transition and the implementation of the new agency.
Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Commissioner Brown. And then a question to CFO Reisenauer. In your slide from page 12 in regards to the issues, approximately $12 million in payments per month, and that would be $144 million, is that correct? Or did I hear a number of $176 million for those support programs in the year of 2023?
Ms. Reisenauer.
I'm sorry, we'll have to pull up our slides so I can make sure I'm
That's fine.
Referring to the right.
And the reason I ask that is because
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Quality Learning Center, not to out them, but they should be outed because they had over 95 violations and wasted $7.8 million of federal money for the child care programs from 2019 to 2018 to 2023. So in this slide of the $12 million per year, did some of that funds, I would presume, get funneled into this particular child care facility and the other child care facilities that are under investigation?
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I don't have information about individual providers right at the moment or payments, if that's what you're asking. We need to look further into which programs are being paid and to individual providers.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, and then just lastly, then is it safe to say then of that particular child care facility that's been exposed by KSTP of the $7.8 million federal money, is it safe to say that our state tax dollars also went to that organization as well?
Ms. Reisenauer.
Mr. Chair, yes. The program is both state and federally funded.
Very good. And then lastly, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Brown, I appreciate your steadfast commitment to get to this waste, fraud, and abuse. And the buck stops, of course, probably with you. And I can see that your sincerity and your disappointment and even anger at what has happened with what's happened in our state in regards to our child care and especially the violations. So I appreciate your work and look forward to working with you to end this as soon as we can. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, first of all, Commissioner Brown and everyone for providing that overview. So you mentioned something like $2.5 billion in federal funding that DCYF receives. And my question is, you know, obviously a lot remains in flux and a lot remains unknown with regards to a potential federal funding freeze. But I will tell you it's something I've been hearing about. It's something that folks, providers in Bloomington, and just last night, it was Representative Cortez-Witun, Representative Perez Vega, and I think there were a couple of other folks. We had a roundtable at the Hallie Q. Brown Center here in St. Paul, and it's something that folks are really, really worried about. And so I'm wondering if you could just speak a little bit to, in as much as you know what the effects might be, what that means for, you know, the all of the things really that DCYF does, but in particular, I'm interested in the Child Care Assistance Program and Head Start funding.
Commissioner Brown?
Thank you so much, Chair and Representative. So DCYF currently is not experiencing a pause in federal funding, and of course we are incredibly concerned about any federal action that could result in Minnesotans not having access to critical services. including but not limited to the ones that you mentioned, food assistance, you know, adoption and foster care assistance, child support services. These are all federally funded. We are keeping in contact with our federal partners in hopes that if there were to be a pause, we'd be in good communication with them, and we would have direct notification about a pause, and in hope that we would have some federal guidance that would come along with that. And we too have been hearing from a lot of folks also concerned about what that might mean for their services, their programs, and of course recipients themselves. So as Ashley Reisenhauer mentioned, we expect to spend about $2.5 billion in federal funds in state fiscal year 2026. I don't believe I have the Head Start dollars in front of me, but I do know that for the child care assistance program, or for the child care program, we serve about 12,000 families. So if we, you know, run through the listing of the populations that are served, it certainly does add up to a large number of Minnesotans who would be at risk if federal funding were to be rescinded or paused.
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't have any further questions, but one thing I would point out, this was mentioned last night, is when families lose child care assistance funding, that affects the center too, right? That affects the place where they take their kids in their communities. And that means that affects even the families who don't receive child care assistance. So I think we need to be very vigilant, very watchful, and really hold folks accountable to make sure that we are supporting families and our kiddos really in the best way possible. So thank you.
Vice Chair Nelson.
Thank you, Chair West, and I believe this is for Commissioner Brown. Looking at on slide 7 as the programs being transferred over, was that really taking basically everybody that was working in that in DHS? You know, was that the employees or the, you know, the staffing? Was it everything that came over, or did you, you know, and how many were there in that staffing, and then did you end up having to hire some new, or just kind of wondering on numbers and whatnot?
Commissioner Brown.
Sure, thank you. So with the, I don't know if I, Ashley may have the breakdown of the numbers per agency of staffing that transferred over, but I can speak to new positions specifically. So when DCYF was first imagined in 2023, the legislature appropriated about funds for 17 leadership positions, and so that includes positions such as myself, Chief Financial Officer, general counsel, et cetera. And then in 2024, the legislature provided funds for 36 FTEs to address some of the critical operating positions as we continue through our transition and the splitting of functions between the different agencies. So as we mentioned, the 95 or a high number currently existed of existing staff from the different agencies, and then about 53, if I'm doing my math correctly, were new hires as a result of the agency.
Vice Chair Nelson.
Okay, thank you for that. And then just kind of as you've been moving and transferring stuff, how has been the work been with, the other agencies, you know, DHS, the Department of Education, whatever? Has that been seamless? Has it been a work in progress? Or?
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, Chair and Representative. We've had a very good relationship with each of the transferring agencies. I think one of the benefits is we had a implementation office that has really helped ensure that we have project management assigned and work groups that are pulled together that have representation from each of the impacted agencies, and that has really ensured that we're addressing all of the needs that come forward as we transfer. Additionally, I think the leadership has been incredibly supportive and prioritized this to ensure that we had no breaks in service. That was one of our top goals as we transition programs over, that there was no external from our county perspective, our tribal perspective, our grantee perspective, we didn't want them to feel any impacts of this transition. And we've met that goal with each of the transitions that have occurred. So far it's been going very well, and people have been very cooperative, and it's been good relationships all around.
Vice Chair
Nelson? Thank you for that, and that's good to hear. I think that's one of the things that it gets concerning when you're transferring and moving, that services, the breakdown and the who to call, you know, that who it used to be, and all of a sudden that number doesn't work anymore. So, no, that's good to hear that it's been working well.
I'm going to jump in with just one question here, I believe for Commissioner Brown. Can you give the committee a specific example of how this transfer away from DHS allows the Department of Children, Youth, and Families to be more efficient and save taxpayer dollars? Like, is there a specific example to where we can see a long-term savings for the taxpayer?
Thank you, Chair West. So we are still in the middle of our transition, so I don't have exact probably outcomes quite yet, but we are in the middle of several functional analyses that I think will help us get to that answer. So for example, as we have transitioned into the new agency, we of course have new areas coming together and working together, and we have looked in a couple different areas. We've looked across all of our training areas. There are a number of different areas within the department that provide training to external partners. And so we're analyzing those functions, their resources, the technology, and all of the work that they do in that space to determine if there are ways we can be more efficient or utilize best practices or learn from each other in that space. Similarly, we have a number of call centers, at least seven that operate within the department, and we are conducting analysis of those call centers to see are there ways that we might consolidate and look at efficiencies in that space. And so there are a few other examples such as those that as we have come together, we have looked to see as we're sort of building up and putting in place new policies and procedures, ways that we can make it more efficient and make it more effective to provide services to not only families, but our partners.
Thank you, Commissioner. So my hope would be, I'm glad to hear you're doing those analysis, obviously, but my hope would be that before the department was created, which is not, you know, there is no shade on you here, that your position didn't exist, but I feel like those analyses of how this is going to really save us money and be more efficient would have been already done, but I'm glad to hear that it is currently being done. Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, Chair. Just touching base back to child welfare, I know you talked about the new initiatives that have been rolling out and the different work that's happening, and I know we funded some things in I mix those S's and I's up. There's too many of them. Just wondering if we could get a brief update on how that work's been going. Sure.
Commissioner Brown.
Yes. Thank you, Chair West, and thank you, Representative. We have, in fact, been doing quite a bit of work over the last several years with the Social Services Information System, SSIS. In 2023, we had specific funding that really looked to map out specifically ways that we could look at modernizing the system, and we worked with a contractor to put in place a way to kind of map that out. We also have really specifically looked at in 2024, excuse me for a minute here, there was $10 million that were appropriated to really look specifically at the child welfare portions of SSIS after the planning portion, and that addressed some of the Paperwork Reduction Act conversations that occurred as well. I will say that to completely modernize the SSIS system, when we've looked at other states, it is quite costly, and so we have taken the approach to take small bits at a time and try to stabilize the system and to make small improvements while recognizing the ultimate goal is to have a new system in place that better serves families and also the workforce.
Representative Hicks.
Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you so much for that explanation. I had the pleasure of sitting down with my county and having a demonstration, and I knew it was bad, I was not aware of how bad. The inability to copy and paste seems like a simple thing that would save a lot of time. So I just wanted to check in because I do think that that's such a priority for us, and I know that that's something that is bipartisan support around this table. And so thank you for sharing that.
So you might wonder if you raise your hand to get on the list and you're like, it's been awfully long. As we go through this, we're alternating parties. Even if they are later, we're going to do our, if there are people on the list, it's going to switch every other between GOP and DFL. So Representative Olson.
I was wondering why I had to wait so long. Goodness gracious. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the question to the commissioner. So as the department's kind of transferring, we're breaking off, you made some comments about how we don't want to stop any, you know, number one goal, don't stop any services, don't have any breaks. Are there processes that are involved in ensuring that by the end of this, when we rip the Band-Aid off, when we're two separate entities, there's no one over here in this cubicle doing the exact same job of this person over here in that cubicle? Because that seems like a waste of taxpayer dollars to me. Can you give us some assurances that that is, in fact, going to be the case?
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, Chair and Representative. Yes, indeed. So as we had a year of planning prior to the launch of the agency in July, and part of that year of planning was really looking at each function and really digging into all of the work that each of the FTEs and the body of work entailed. And so it was a very deliberate process as we thought about which positions would transfer away from an agency and into the new one, looking at the home agency, if you will, to make sure that they could continue their work, and then looking at DCYF to ensure that functions could also be done at the new agency. And so that sometimes meant that, dealing with a smaller agency, for example, at the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, we combine job descriptions in some cases, right, where it might have been a single function at the Department of Human Services, but due to the size and scope at the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, it became, you know, two parts rather than one. In addition, we have interagency agreements in place throughout the course of this year to make sure that we have functions that are operating behind the scenes and to ensure that, again, nothing falls through the cracks, because we do know that as we bring new teams together and reorganize them to get going on work, there is a little bit of an adjustment period. And so those interagency agreements also ensure that the work continues with the home agencies and that we're well situated in that space as well.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. That's a good answer.
Well done, Commissioner. Vice Chair Hansen.
Thank you for getting right this time, Chair. Appreciate that. Not to beat a dead horse here, but about SSIS. I'm curious about, we had expected that there would be some federal matches coming, given the unpredictability of our federal administration and whether or not they'll abide by court orders, unfreeze money, not unfreeze money. Do you have any idea about how any of that is going to affect Family First funding coming through or the match that we had hoped for to get for the replacement of SSIS?
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, Chair West, and I may ask Ashley to speak a little bit more to this, but we, of course, don't have any indication yet as to any lack of follow-through in terms of the expected match that we receive. Ashley can speak a little bit more to what that means in terms of our financial systems, how the match works in a little bit more detail than I think I can. But as of right now, we don't have any indication that we will be unable to receive a match, and we continue to operate in a manner in which that we will receive that match.
Ms. Reisenhauer.
Thank you, Chair. I would just add that we're continuing to plan with our SSIS funding. On average in SSIS, the feds cover about 50%, so every dollar draws on another dollar from the federal match.
Vice Chair Hansen.
Thank you for the follow-up, Chair West. Kind of to follow up on what Chair West had said, too, in terms of efficiencies go, and I maybe don't have an answer for this exactly, but I would imagine that should we not replace SSIS, that will significantly limit your ability to produce efficiencies, especially with our frontline social workers and such at the county level working directly with families. Would that be accurate?
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, Chair West and Representative. Yes, in fact, our counties have been particularly vocal in sharing the amount of time that they spend on SSIS due to the lack of ability to copy and paste or the spinning circle where they need to wait to conduct their business does in fact take away times from the time that they should spend with families and children. And so I don't have a monetary, you know, amount with that, but they have said very explicitly that that is an efficiency issue.
Vice Chair Hansen.
Thank you, and thank you for that answer. I think that's just really important for the committee and audience to know that should we not make these investments in SSIS, we really kind of hamstring ourselves in our ability to make progress on this. And I think, you know, with my background, it's important to know that when you're a child protection worker, you know, your best notes are your first notes. And so when you've typed all these notes in and you've spent hours doing that and then you lose everything, your next notes are not going to be as effective, right? And so I think it's just a little day-to-day work thing that a lot of caseworkers would like all of us to understand, that it may seem like, oh, I just have to reload this. It's not like they're retyping a sentence or two. They're typing out the entire family dynamics, the entire biopsychosocial, you know, background for a family potentially, or an entire out-of-home placement plan. And so having to do that significantly affects how well we can serve the families who need these services. So that's my soapbox. Thank you, Chair West.
It's a very good soapbox. The committee's one of the few things that I think absolutely have to do is fund the SSIS fix. And however we get there, I challenge the committee to help us find a way to get there, because it is a disaster, as the vice chair really well pointed out. And now we'll go to Representative Zeleznikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. My question is, in the past 6 months, there's been several freestanding centers, family child care providers in northeastern Minnesota, and for that, mention the state, that have had their child care programs close. And this department on page slide 19 shows that there's a 0.3% increase in new costs, which, if I'm doing math right, it's $11 million. So my question is, you know, you mentioned improving the front door for services, and I'd like you to share one new initiative that the agency has developed to support and grow family and freestanding center-based child care to reverse this dramatic and devastating trend of closures that's happening by the week as we sit here today as children and families. So I'd love to see your feedback with this investment of $11.1 million in new money that the decision was made to create a new department, what this department's going to do with those that $11.1 million to assist in reversing this tragic trend that's affecting greater Minnesota in a significant manner, and it's also affecting the suburbs in Minneapolis-St. Paul. Thank you.
I don't know if that's Commissioner Brown or
our CFO, Ashley Reisenhauer, speak a little bit to the $11 million that you referenced, and then we'll speak a little bit to the child care. Thank you.
Ms. Reisenhauer.
Thanks. So on slide 19, it references our total budget, and it shows the DCYF appropriation of $10.7 million. That $10.7 million represents the two appropriations that Commissioner Brown talked about for additional staff. So from 2023, there was an appropriation for about 17 new positions, leadership positions that all agencies need. And then in 2024, an additional roughly 36 positions for critical operating staff. And so those were things needed to manage the agency and support program operations. I'll turn it over to talk more about the programs themselves.
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you. Thank you, Vice Chair. And so I'll ask Assistant Commissioner Diane Halsey to speak a little bit more to some of the programs that are currently in existence. I will say we are 6 months in as a new agency, and we are not yet complete with our transition. And much of our focus has been really focused on transitioning programs over without breaks in service and building out the agency while continuing existing programming. But Diane, Assistant Commissioner Housley, can speak a little bit more to some of the work that is in place to address some of the issues that you've raised.
Assistant Commissioner, would you please identify yourself for the record and proceed?
Good afternoon. I'm Diane Halsey, Assistant Commissioner of Early Childhood. And I apologize, I was looking for Chair West, and then this voice came from like the, so I apologize about that. Thank you, Representative, for the question. First, I want to start by saying that we are well aware of the decrease in childcare programs, in particular, all over the state, quite frankly, but in particular in northern Minnesota. And so we have a few programs that we have that are helping to not only maintain the childcare programs that we have, but hopefully to grow them as well. In 2023 legislative session, the legislature started a program called the Great Start Compensation Program, which was actually the idea of it came from what we did with some of our federal dollars during COVID to help keep childcare programs open. And so all childcare programs, whether you're a center-based program or a family childcare program, are eligible to apply monthly for these grant, basically, it's grant compensation, and the purpose of the money is to help to increase the compensation of childcare providers, which we know are often woefully underpaid. That program has been very successful in terms of the number of childcare providers that have taken us up on it, and is really helping us to maintain our childcare. Many of the childcare programs that may have left the field are remaining in the field, we have heard anecdotally, because of that program. Also in the 2023 legislative session, there was another program that was developed called Grow Your Own. And so this is building off of the professional development work that we do within the Child Care Services Department. And so we are it's a program that is looking at actively trying to figure out how do we bring in new people into the child care field, new early childhood educators, people that want to open up a child care program, whether it's family child care or center-based child care. How do we get new people into the early childhood field? So those are a couple of the programs that we have that we're operating right now, currently.
Representative Zlesnikar, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Vice Chair, and thank you for that information. So I guess my question would be the Great Start compensation has been in place since the COVID. It was renamed, but it's been an initiative that, as to your point, came from an idea through the COVID pandemic. And the Grow Your Own, those programs have been going on. That reality is the daycares are still closing. And so what I'm looking for is some initiatives that we have 23 positions that are going to be allocated with, I think, almost $11 million of funding. That is money that's in St. Paul, not in the community for child care. So what I want to hear is what we're going to be doing to change the fact that child cares are closing, because those programs are in place and have been, and we're still seeing a downward trend. And some of the areas in Duluth right now have not one center. And so this is an issue that is hitting the communities at just an incredible speed. So I urge you to really look in a deep dive of what's going to be a new innovative way to help child care. These programs, those that have been on the committee know of, but we need some new innovative models that are going to uplift child care providers in greater Minnesota, suburbs in Minneapolis, St. Paul, or we're not going to change this trajectory. And so that's what I'm looking to hear. And I know you've only been doing it 6 months, but this
$11 million investment in new people in a new agency needs to be committed to childcare, stabilization for providers. That's fundamental in my mind to this committee. So I look forward to feedback from you on what that's going to look like. Thank you.
Well, it sounds like there's a bill idea. So thank you for that. Next, we will go to Representative Hemmingson Yeager.
Thank you, Vice Chair, Last Chair. So I'm trying to think back. I think it was like 2018, 2019-ish. There was a whole bunch of hearings and stuff talking about CCAP fraud and CCAP reforms. And so I'm just kind of curious, following all of reforms and legislation during that time, like what's been put into place, and then are you carrying any of that over, or are you starting totally fresh?
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, Chair West. There certainly was a number of items from my understanding that the Department of Human Services Office of Inspector General put in place during 2018 and 2019, and some of them, such as the early and often program that I mentioned earlier, in fact did show great results, and they continue to work on that now. And so the existing programs that operate within the Office of Inspector General as they exist right now at the Department of Human Services will transition fully into the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. With the addition of our new Inspector General, of course, we with new leadership in that space, and with the leadership structure at the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, we of course expect to have some additional opportunity to dig in more deeply into some of those activities and look also about some of the operational components that we can put in place to ensure that all of our programs are well coordinated. So that's some of the work that we look forward to doing in the upcoming weeks with the new Inspector General. But there will be nothing that will be stopped as a result of the transition of the Inspector General programs from DHS over to DCYF.
Representative Hemmings-Yates.
Thank you. It's nice to see something that was working and is now kind of being carried over and expanded. So thank you for that. And then on slide 25, I really appreciate how you kind of differentiate between like administrative action versus suspected fraud being a criminal activity and going to law enforcement. I'm curious if you have any idea of how many cases have been referred to like the counties and how many cases have been referred to the BCA. And then how many cases and compared to how many have been resolved or closed?
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, Chair West and Representative. I unfortunately do not have that data. That would be something that we could ask for our Department of Human Services folks to prepare and provide.
That would be fantastic. Okay. Thank you. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for joining us today and answering the questions. You know, one of the things that I hear all the time, I think, following up with Representative Zalesnikar is the closing of the daycares and really hearing a lot of feedback of the heavy burden that is put on them, regulations, and wondering about your agency, if you're looking to streamline, you know, making things easier, really looking at this more of a partnership and wanting to work with them. Many of them, I think, feel like the process is confusing, the paperwork is very burdensome, and that also that there's a lot of inconsistencies in the agency from what one person says to what another one does. And it all adds to a lot of pressure on these providers at a time when they are really feeling it. They're having a difficulty making a profit. And I just would like to hear specifically from your agency, how can you partner to remove some of these burdens and so that we're looking at this differently, that we're looking at we have to grow this industry instead of overregulate it?
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, Chair West, and thank you, Representative, for the question. One of the first task that we'll have our Inspector General do along with Assistant Commissioner Halsey is partner together and go on a series of, what would you call it, listening sessions, opportunities to hear directly from folks as a team and as a unit, so that from the licensing and Inspector General standpoint, as well as from the programmatic side, they can hear together as leaders what folks are saying and can work together cooperatively on some of the issues that you mentioned. That's one of the sort of key factors as we have built this new agency has really been on engagement and taking time to listen to folks and hear what they would like to hear and see differently within the new agency. And so we continue to prioritize that not only with our executive leadership team, but also with our program staff to make sure that we have open doors of communication and then can actually act on some of the recommendations that folks are sending our way. So appreciate that.
Thank you.
Just Representative Altendorf.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Yeah, just one more then, you know, and it's been mentioned, but with the amount of fraud that's just been rampant across the state, and I appreciate that you brought that into your presentation, you know, just more specifically, what could, the public's very worried about tax dollars coming in and then them going out the back door and there's no oversight happening here, but at what point would you say that if something was fraudulent, you know, would payments be stopped? Can you just talk a little bit about that, about what is the procedures of, you know, it's going to be identified, but then how do we actually stop payments going from something that does look to be fraudulent?
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, Chair Weston, Representative. That, unfortunately, is a little outside of my purview at this point in time, and I would need Office of Inspector General staff or DHS to speak a little bit more clearly to some of those more specific steps about when something, you know, would turn off or turn off regarding payments. And so cannot answer that at this time. Happy to get that or look for others to speak to that.
Any others to speak to that? No. That is something that the committee would be very interested in hearing. So when you do get that answer, if you could share it with all the members of the committee, that'd be very helpful. Representative Altendorf. All right. Representative Nadeau.
I wouldn't
alter names. I'm unaware of.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. And thank you, Commissioner. Thanks for being here. I know that you guys have just started this 6-8 months ago. I'm super excited to see, you know, how we can kind of realign the way that we've dealt with children, youth, and families from a state agency standpoint and the interactions that we have with counties. I mean, that's something you haven't talked about today at all, but counties play an incredible role and an important role in delivering some of these services. I've got a couple of questions. And I'm gonna throw them out there. It's three. Two are very specific. One is a little bit broader. I just don't want to go back and forth. But number one, in the slides, it showed that your budget is $3.7 billion. I thought I saw in the governor's recommendations it's $4.7 billion. So can somebody just clarify that for me?
Ms. Rainshauer.
Mr. Chair, I think the additional $1 billion probably represents the technical and fiduciary funds that DCYF is responsible for. So I mentioned this briefly in our presentation, but DCYF does oversee some funds such as the Child Support Program, where the payments are not state, it's not state funds, so it doesn't necessarily show up in a fund balance or our budget, but we are responsible for it, and it does show up in our budget book. There are some other pass-through activities, such as federal reimbursement for administrative activities for the state or for counties, that we also serve as a pass-through for, so that does also show up in our budget book as part of that additional $1 billion.
Representative Nadeau.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, thank you. My second question, and I'm gonna try to do these both. So recently, DHS came out with new regulations for family care centers that they've since pulled back a little bit and said we're gonna rethink about some of these things. Will that authority for those new regulations be transferred to your department, or will they stay with DHS? That's the question. And then the other one is, I want you to spend a little bit of time talking about, has there been some reticence, some barriers to pulling some of these people and departments from DHS, from MDE, and especially when it comes to some of our, you know, child protection and our juvenile justice programs. I feel like the strength in our government is that push and pull. And I'm hoping that they've pushed back in some cases, saying that, you know, that what we're doing here is important and needs to stay here. But if you could just spend a little bit of time, you know, with that. And if there hasn't been, great. I'm just curious.
Commissioner Brown.
All right. Chair West and Representative, thank you for those questions. So in terms of the new regulation efforts that are currently housed at the Department of Human Services under the Office of Inspector General, those will transfer over to the Department of Children, Youth, and Families at the end of June. And so I have been keeping involved and getting information from our folks over at DHS as to the progress and progression of those efforts, along with many members of my team. So we're tracking that carefully in anticipation of that of those efforts transferring over. In regards to your second question, push and pull for staff and for programs as they transfer over to the department. To my knowledge, I mean, I think certainly there have been a few employees who probably would prefer not to have any upheaval and would prefer to stay exactly where they were at, quite honestly. I think that I've not been aware of any conversations about particular programs, with the exception of maybe one, where they have pushed, especially in the juvenile justice space and also in the child welfare space, where they thought they should stay at Department of Public Safety and then also at Human Services. As we've in the juvenile justice space especially, I think there's been some excitement about some of the coordination that could occur with some of the prevention programs, and there's been some excitement about some of the alignment that could occur and coordination that can occur in that space. That's not to say that there isn't work to be done as we transfer those programs over and think about, you know, things like our grants management system, how we'll be managing that at the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, which is a little different than is at the Department of Public Safety. So we're working through some of those nuances, but with the exception of a few staff and a few minor programs, nothing of substance.
Representative Doe.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. I, you know, just the different ways that we present and approach kids that are Health and Human Service involved versus corrections involved is different, and that's why I was, you know, I haven't yet been able to get my head around how Children's, Youth, and Families are going to be able to handle that. It's delicate, and I think it's difficult. And so that's why I was asking the question. But I'll stay tuned, and hopefully we can have further conversations. So thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Katizwa-Toon.
Thank you, Chair West. And thank you for being here with us today. This has really been helpful, I think, as we kind of all get in the right mindset of this new department and all the work that you all have been putting in over these months and the work that is still yet to come. So I have two questions. One thing I wanted to clarify about some of the comments about fraud referrals over to the BCA. I also sit on the Commerce Committee with Chair West, and on Thursday we're going to be hearing a bill or a presentation rather on the governor's executive order to shift the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. The fraud division, excuse me, over to the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. And I'm curious if these referrals, if you know, I know because it's still within DHS, but if you are able to say that if that is something that new has been happening after the governor's executive order in January, were those fraud cases being sent to the Commerce Department and now they're being sent to the BCA, or have they always kind of gone in that direction?
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you, Chair West, Representative, to my knowledge, that has always been the case with the Department of Human Services Office of Inspector General. Those referrals have always moved over to the BCA.
Chair Katisa Batum.
Thank you. That's helpful just for me to understand because I know that that's been a recent change. My second question is if you could talk perhaps a little bit about federal compliance and where we stand, how we've moved the needle forward over the past few years, and specifically in regards to electronic attendance records and how that is going to help child care providers just more in a more timely manner submit those that information, and also perhaps from the oversight and program integrity side of things help us track appropriately.
Commissioner Brown.
Thank you so much for that question. So Minnesota regularly receives, what would you call it, audits or conversations with our federal partners, and in particular within the child care space. I believe last spring had a federal audit which identified a number of new changes that that our federal partners would like Minnesota to put in place. And so we have been in conversation with those federal partners to on a number of them to get additional information. Some of the suggestions that our federal partners have put forward to us are in fact things that have been brought forward by partners and in fact are things that our team has been working on for a number of years. So I can speak a little bit more clearly on the licensing. So the electronic, or not licensing, I'm sorry, the electronic attendance record keeping is a program integrity function that we do in fact have a bill for this year that would help us comply with the federal requirements. This also was a result in 2019, I believe. There was an Office of Legislative Audit report that recommended that Minnesota move towards electronic record keeping. And so we're meeting multiple measures here. But the electronic record keeping moves us from a maybe more of a piecemeal approach. Some providers do provide this, but most are actually using a paper-based a record-keeping system, and what we've learned from our friends over at the Department of Human Services, Office of Inspector General, as they look to automate and review cases, in fact, having a statewide electronic record-keeping system would be incredibly beneficial and would allow for them to dig more deeply into some of the maybe more patterns that are occurring, identify things much more quickly, and then also with that movement forward, provide a little bit of extra capacity for teams to dig more deeply into other issues that might arise. So we have a number of positives that would come out of moving towards a statewide electronic record keeping system.
Chair Cassidy with two.
Thank you. That's really helpful. Chair West and I both were serving on the Early Childhood Committee back in 2019, and so I recall that that was a recommendation back then, and I know that we've been inching our way forward on some of these investments, and some particularly from the technology side of things. So I appreciate that update, and I think that just knowing and enhancing some of the systems that are already in place with technology that can make A, providers' lives easier, and then B, make it easier for you all to enforce and catch any fraudulent activity that may be happening as soon as possible. Thank you.
We are now on to the second round of a couple of members. You're just so interesting. We just can't stop asking questions. And I really appreciate you abiding by, we asked for a more condensed presentation, so we had time for questions, and you nailed that. It's very much appreciated. No filibustering going on here. I do have a question, which I've asked you before, is the Great Start Compensation Program. We've asked for getting that information, and we've gotten some, but not all of the information. And the committee could use the information, what each entity is receiving from Great Start Compensation. It's a very, very expensive program, as you're well aware, and especially considering the program integrity issues and the oversight role of this committee, is valuable information for the committee to have. So is it possible to get that information either tomorrow or the next day?
If I may.
Mr. Chair, members, again, Jennifer Sommerfeld. We've provided you with the information that we can at this time. A decision was made over a year ago. I don't recall who made it, but a decision was made that we would be follow the Child Care Assistance Program regulations for what data we could provide regarding the Great Start Compensation Support Payment Program. And so we've provided that data to you, but we do have a policy proposal that I expect to bring forward this year because we believe that this should actually be transparent and we should be able to provide you with all of the data. So we do have a policy proposal to clarify that that is in fact the case. And so we've been talking with providers in the past about, we had a lot of pushback from providers, particularly in the family child care community, about providing information about the payments that they would receive. And so I think that our agency's position is for us to be able to work with you all at the legislature on that and helping make sure that it's clear to folks why we need transparency, that these are akin to business subsidies. They're not a welfare program payment as somebody might receive through MFIP or SNAP. So the data should be treated differently.
It's my understanding that the data in the CCAP program is written in statute that you release not all of it, but just above a certain threshold. It's my understanding, maybe Ms. Mock can enlighten me, sorry to put you on the spot, is the Great Start Compensation Program, I believe, was moved out of the CCAP statute and would not have that restriction placed on it. It's my understanding, if you could enlighten us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's correct that when we recodified the statutes to account for the establishment of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, that we moved the Great Start Compensation Program from the statutes, from the chapter that included CCAP to a separate chapter.
Thank you, Ms. Bond. So since it's now regulated under another chapter, I don't think that it's appropriate for the department to just make a policy decision. We're not going to share this information with the relevant committee. It's a lot of money. We're talking hundreds of millions of dollars, as you're well aware. Where do you get the authority to make that policy decision?
Mr. Chair, members, I can get back to you on the authority that we have on that. I don't have statutes in front of me on that. I think one of the reasons that we are not making a change in that right at this moment without pursuing legislation aligns a bit with what we've been hearing today about the importance of us working closely together with child care providers to ensure that they're staying in business. We have heard that some providers will, especially family child care providers, to be honest with you, do not want to receive those payments if their data is going to be public. And so would like to make sure that we are doing this in a way that's collaborative with the legislature, collaborative with the administration, and collaborative with child care providers to bring them along so that they understand why we will be providing this information. But I can certainly get back to you on legal authorities.
That is, I would argue that you don't have the authority, obviously. And that, I mean, it's concerning because even though it's like, I genuinely do want to be collaborative on this committee, but this is just program. As we've had a theme of program integrity, we should really know where that money's going. And if a business is receiving, as you mentioned, it's a business subsidy, I very much support the taxpayers knowing what businesses are getting what money because it's their money that we're spending. So if you cannot find the legal authority, I believe, regardless of heartburn of people receiving taxpayer dollars, it is your duty to supply it to the committee without statutory indication otherwise. And now I finish kicking off round two, so we will go to Representative Hicks. Oh, gotcha. Representative McDonald is actually correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but ladies first, Representative Hicks.
Representative Hicks.
I was trying to be nice. Thank you so much, Chair, and thank you. I'm a little confused, and I'm going to need somebody to tell me if maybe I'm not remembering right. It's a long day. But child care licensing, family child care and centers are licensed, or family child care at least, is licensed in individual counties. Is that right? And yes. Centers are also licensed by the, because we were talking, okay, I'm confused. I know family child care is. Are centers licensed by DHS then? Okay, thank you. I'm so sorry. That was probably a question everybody knew but me, but I was confused and just wanted to clarify. So thank you so much. So when someone else was talking about inconsistencies, I assume that that's because we have two different ways that we license. I mean, that maybe that plays in, maybe it doesn't. I don't, can someone tell me? Or is this something that I need to talk to people offline because I'm confused?
Commissioner Brown.
Chair West and Representative, I appreciate the question, and I unfortunately do not have the expertise yet to answer that question, but we certainly, that's okay. We absolutely can get that clarified and get that information to you and to the committee.
The humble Honorable Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. See, according to an updated version study from Tutris, I don't know if you're familiar with Tutris. It's a great, I'm going to write it, or just write this down if you get a chance. It's very informative, and it'll help committee members and those in the room regarding child care. TOOTRIS.com. But the recent study indicates that Minnesota, you probably know this, Commissioner, is the seventh most expensive state in the nation for child care. The average child care is around $15,000 per year for a four-year-old. And up to $20,000 for a center-based. For a newborn, an infant, it's over $20,000 a year. It's the seventh highest. Now, the good news is that Minnesota also, despite the KSDP recent story regarding this one child care with 95 violations, is one of the most safe places for your children to put to have child care. So that's good news, but the most expensive, one of the most expensive. What can we do as a legislature and you as the commissioner and your new team do to bring those costs down? Not necessarily more grants and more money into the program, but what can we do? If you go to that website, you'll see our surrounding states from Iowa, North Dakota, South Dakota, Wisconsin, and then even out to California. Minnesota is even more expensive than California. But if you go to that site, you'll get very great resources, but you'll see that we are just behind the ball. But what can we do with your help, or what can we do as a legislature to help you bring those costs down? I'm new to the committee. I don't know what kind of legislation we can do, but it's your team, and I'm sure that's a concern to you, mm-hmm. Commissioner.
I'm just going to tiny bit butt in here, because Representative makes a great point of we would love to have your recommendations on.
I should probably learn how to flip a switch. we would
love. We're not blaming on the Senate, Mr. Chair.
Yes, correct. The Senate is truly awful. We like, in the spirit of collaboration, so we're all working on ideas how we can make child care more affordable. From what I've seen from the department, there's a regulatory approach. I'm not sure about the focus of lowering costs, but I know the department shares we want costs to be lower. We welcome, as Representative McDonald alluded to, like we would love your assistance on lowering healthcare costs, because of course, child care costs, because of course the whole committee is united in that goal, as is the department. So if we can have tangible goals that don't require horse trading and screaming bloody murder, that would be fantastic. So please enlighten us if there's anything the department has.
Chair Weston, Representative, I appreciate the highlighting of the cost, and certainly, yes, we understand that Minnesota is indeed one of the higher cost states. There have been a number of reports that have been and committees and work groups that have come together in the last several years that have a number of recommendations. Many of them are, in fact, do require more funding. However, one of the activities that Assistant Commissioner Halsey and her team in putting together the early learning team from education and the child care team from human services, they're working to really look at all the services that are currently being provided from the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, really looking to assess what are ways that we might be able to align and adjust and work at some of the exact issues that you brought forward. So that I would love to delve more deeply into that with our teams and you know, whether it be in another committee hearing or with some other folks, but would like to bring in a few other folks to help provide that information and dig into that. There are a number of, you know, a lot of smart folks around the state that have put a lot of thought into that, and I think would welcome additional conversation with this committee on ways that we could address this.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think if anything this committee could do this year or this biennium is to help bring those costs down and to prevent or help closures in greater Minnesota. That would be, I think, a shining star, our North Star, that we could actually accomplish that. And I know that Chair Rest and Cassis of Watoon, that's on their priority list. So let's do it, Mr. Chair.
Representative Perez-Vega.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. I don't want to take too much time because we've been here forever. I just want to address that. I will be reaching out from my office to talk in particularly with the Department of Public Safety initiatives with our juvenile system. As somebody that used to work in teaching at Red Wing Correctional Facilities way back when, the need for this, these are kids. And so I want to address that because I heard some colleagues say that, you know, they're interested in learning more, too. How this interjects, and this is kind of one of the highlights that when this department was opening, my heart really approached to saying we got to get this right because they are just children, and so that is just something that I want to highlight on the work, and I look forward to speaking with you more on that, and also addressing the needs for our child care. A couple of the reps in the past 2 years went to the White House to discuss these initiatives with other states and legislators. To say, yeah, we're seventh, but everybody seems to be struggling with this. So how can Minnesota and us together as a committee make this right? And I think this department's leadership is going to be a large impact. So I just look forward to working with you in the next 2 years and be on deck. Thank you.
We are a minute over. I'm somewhat embarrassed about that. Got it, Keith. Stay on time. I'm really impressed with this committee, though, that this actually was a real conversation and not a total waste of time, which presentations can dwell in that space every so often. So thank you for coming, thank you for sharing, thank you for the thoughtful discussion, and this meeting is adjourned.